The Intentional Fatherhood Retreat is fast approaching, and we want to let you know that there are group rate tickets for five or more and also volunteer tickets. February 19th through 21, we are going to be in Costa Mesa, California, doing our first ever Fatherhood Retreat. We cannot wait to meet so many of you in person. We're going to have a whole new merch line coming out, so make sure you're ready for some sweet merch. And also, you're going to hear from so many wonderful, amazing, godly men on the journey of fatherhood. So if you haven't had a chance to get a ticket yet, go to intentionalfatherhood.org, grab your tickets today. Enjoy this week's episode. Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we give you a strong biblical framework and lots of practical ideas on how to live intentionally as a father and a husband. I'm Brooke Moser.
And I'm Justin Whitmore Early, and we're your hosts to guide you through the many roles and challenges that God is calling you to live intentionally as a father. We're following a visual framework that you can check out at intentionalfatherhood.org, and it's going to help you break down fatherhood into eight callings.
And in each one, we're going to talk about how God made you to be a father and what practical habits you can start trying today in order to live intentionally into that calling.
So come along with us as we follow Jesus on this journey towards being more intentional fathers.
Welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where I've just learned recently that Justin has modeled recently in his time.
Are we actually recording?
We're actually recording.
You can't tell people this.
Oh, so, man. I can't wait till they find it. Anyway, I mean, it's okay. You're a handsome guy. It's fine. It's You're embarrassed, but I'm not. And I think that you have to remember there's nothing to be embarrassed about. Nothing to be embarrassed about. I want to highlight something. Today's a bonus episode.
Bonus episode.
Bonus episode on a topic that not many of us think about much, but we figured we should talk about it, and that is sex. Sex inside our marriage.
It's going to be really hard for us to be mature about this topic.
Let's be honest.
We are two guys talking about sex.
With a boyish heart that is as pure as can be. But to be honest, there's just too many things we've already said, and we're just like, oh, we can't say that. Oh, we can't say it that way. Can't say it that way. So here's what our promise is. We are going to do our best to be appropriate and to be honest about this topic and to share from our real lives. But I cannot promise that there will not be moments of random laughter based upon a phrase that is said maybe the wrong way. And we'll do our best. But I think with our dynamic, Justin, there's just a good chance one of us is going to say something.
We'll try
the wrong way. And also want to say thank you for listening to season two and going through that content with us. And just have to say, obviously, if you do have questions, remember, send a voice memo, 1 minute voice memo, simply with your name, where you're from, and email that to hello@intentionalfatherhood.org. And then also, please let this not be white noise, but thank you for rating, subscribing, and leaving a comment, Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen. Even on YouTube, it's just so helpful. And we so appreciate that as a gift. And please do that if you haven't had a chance. So we want to talk about this topic. It shows up in, we're going to talk to fathers. We're going to talk to men who are married. And we're going to be speaking specifically to fathers. So if you are a sister listening, please do. Totally love it. We welcome it. But also know that we're going to basically be talking from our experience as husbands and as fathers and as men. And so we want to speak specifically to the men just right out the gate to be clear about that. And then also this topic is just one that is a huge part of the male experience. I mean, It's just such a big part of the male experience. And it's obviously a part of the female experience, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so to acknowledge that it's not wrong, it's different. And I think that the needs that we're experiencing or that we're even going to be talking about are going to be from a male perspective and speaking from that place of maybe your sex drive is really high or for some men, your sex drive might be low. And we're going to talk about that. But in general, men are very visual. And so there's a visualness to our sexuality in the sense that often what we see can activate what we think. Mm-hmm. And I think this is, again, true for women. But maybe what we know by and large is maybe not as extreme in certain ways. And so it just looks different for us. And so you have the visual nature of it. The Bible says the eyes of the man are never satisfied. That's a very interesting and very revealing phrase. But we also know that understanding sex within our marriage, what's expected, what's healthy, what's good is so important. And also remembering, like, what is our role as fathers, as husbands, as men, as Jesus followers in this time? And how do we talk about this, like, in a normal, healthy way? And so instead of, like, avoiding this topic, which would have been more comfortable, we're just going to dive right into it. And we're going to start with the idea of intimacy. Justin, any opening thoughts?
Well, you talk about this, right, in your intentional ministry.
Yeah, with intentional marriage, yeah, we have an arm of what we do. You know, this is intentional fatherhood, but we have intentional marriage. My wife and I get to lead that, and her parents speak into that sometimes.
So for me, this is not something that I talk about a lot. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see how this goes. It is something that after much debate, I included a chapter on in The Body Teaches the Soul. So this was my first foray into trying to get canceled by writing a chapter on sex.
I mean, why are people wanting to cancel
it? It was funny because all my friends were joking but serious when I was talking about writing a book on embodiment. They were like, yeah, I could write a chapter on sex, right? And like, I was like, no, too risky, too, I don't, yeah. And then I kept saying that over and over. How
can you not?
Wait, the more I read the Bible, the more I read about our biology, the more I thought about it, I was like, oh my gosh, you can't talk about embodiment. You can't talk about image bearers without talking about sex, because it's right at the beginning of the whole story. Mm. Right at the beginning, God makes all of creation.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes male and female in his own image.
Yeah.
And then there's this Genesis 2 idea that we don't bear the complete image without mm-hmm. each other.
Yeah.
And that only together, which connotes sexual union.
Yes.
Are we fully yes. who God made us to be? And it is an idea that actually theologically and physically makes you blush mm-hmm. a little bit. Because the question is, why did God invent sex at all?
Mm-hmm.
And why did he put it at such the center of what it means to be like him?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, he likes this idea.
Yeah.
Clearly, he thinks that this is really important.
And really,
yet we hesitate to talk about it. But here we are. We got to.
I think in the Christian circles especially, there's a lot of, we're not going to go and give you the deep theology. There's a lot of smarter, higher paid, well-educated people that can give you the full background of all this. But sex was made by God for our good and for procreation and beauty. Obviously, we know that. And it's interesting.
Well, do we obviously know that, though?
Maybe not.
I think we need to dwell on it. Maybe keep talking, but yes. I don't think it is as clear to everybody as it ought to be.
Yes.
That God invented sex,
yes.
calls it good, and thinks it's good that you like it.
The other day, we were sitting at the table, and I can't remember what I referred to, but we have an open sexual culture in our home, meaning we talk about things appropriately, but like questions aren't off limits around sex or questions. Yeah. Especially as our kids have gotten older.
Yeah.
This has led me to some very interesting conversations with my older two kids. There's the movie Dumb and Dumber. If you remember this movie,
of course I remember this movie. It's incredible.
There's a guy wearing a hat that says Wynum Dynum in 69. Have you seen this hat?
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah. You forgot about it. Well, I didn't. And you know who else didn't? My son, who saw it. And he goes, so Dad, what does that even mean?
Oh,
and
I was
like, do you really want to know? You know? And I was like, I'll tell you. You know I will. And he goes, yeah, tell me. So I tell him, it's a position and here's what it is. And he goes,
Wait, how old is he at the time?
He's 15.
15. Okay. Oh, okay.
He's like, okay. Good to know. And I was like, great. Glad we had this talk. Like, we've just decided to make it as normal as possible that they talk to us about. And obviously we're jumping into the parenting part right now. But I think it's huge, like that it's so helpful because so many of us grew up in a time, and men, I'm going to speak to you. You grew up in a time like Justin and I, where you maybe had a parent, and the good parents at least had one conversation with their kids, maybe multiple, but maybe just even one.
Hmm.
But majority had none. And still to this day, I will never forget. My parents never talked to me about sex ever.
Hmm.
And the interesting thing was that they in some way got slated to pick us up the morning after our wedding night to drive us to the airport. And obviously the wedding night happens. I was a virgin when I got married. So was my wife. We get married. The coolest thing in my entire life just happened. And I get into a car with my parents and we just talk like shooting the breeze.
Not schedule a taxi or something. Dude, why was this?
I was 21 at the time. I don't know how
you're
this
old enough to know better. How you got yourself in that situation. I don't know.
But I'm sitting there thinking the coolest thing in my entire life has just transpired. Like by a long shot, you know, I've only been on this earth 21 but years.
Can't say long. We're talking about an episode on sex.
I'm doing my best. And truly I'm sitting there like in the car with my parents thinking, and they're asking like questions like, how was the wedding? You know, just like questions that don't have to do with like the obvious elephant in the car of like, you have no idea. What, I mean, of course they had some idea, but I was like, it's the coolest thing. And I wish, you know, I wish sometimes that like there was that moment of like, I don't want to give details to my parents, but also like, let's rejoice. This is such a cool thing. But there was no framework for this. So many of us grew up, especially in the church, our parents just never said anything about it.
Yeah.
And I think that what we are trying to, at least myself and Elizabeth in our home, is not like go, you know, pendulum to the other side, but at least create a culture where, hey, sex is a part of your life. Mm-hmm. It's a part of your story. It's a part of your body.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I would chime in there and say same. I don't recall a good, helpful conversation on sex with my parents early.
And you had
I know
parents.
It happened later when some things went wrong.
Exactly.
And most of us grew up only hearing that, what not to do.
Yes.
Or just hearing silence. So yeah, Lauren and I are really big on talking early and talking often.
Yeah.
To the boys. So not one conversation.
Ongoing.
I love it. There's a great ministry called the Birds and the Bees.
Yeah.
Really helpful frameworks for talking about sex with yes. young children. And they call it the drip, drip, drip model of like just little conversations everywhere yes. along the way. Because, and I think this is really important, when it comes to something as important as sex, clarity is kindness.
Yes.
It does not do us any favors to be unclear on what this is and what it's meant for. Because if you are not clear as a parent with your kids, the world will be very clear.
They're crystal clear.
You don't teach them what it is, and by the way, you're the dad, right?
Yeah.
They think you know everything about everything at the young age, yeah, right? And then they quickly think you know nothing about anything in the adolescent stage. But,
yes.
But early and often means you're the master of all subjects. Mm-hmm. So you have this great position to tell your kids what it is before the world tries to tell them what it is, mm-hmm. because the world is very confused about what sex is. And that's also why I think clarity is kindness, to understand the glorious nature of what God gives us in sexual union is to understand so much of life.
Mm-hmm.
And to be confused about sexuality or to be confused about what sex is to be confused about so much of life. Mm-hmm. And so it's so helpful to talk about it. So we start there, right? Like maybe a theological case for sex.
Yeah. Just to say sex is good. God created it. It's beautiful. But sex has so much power. And it has such an energy that when it is outside of your marriage and it is outside, it is just absolutely destructive. And similarly, inside of a healthy marriage, it is life-giving. It literally is the thing that brings life. Think of babies, right? It is so powerful. It has the ability to make life. Like, mm-hmm. So we just have to understand we are playing with, for an analogy that makes sense, you are playing with literal fire that could literally bring life and warmth or mm-hmm. destruction and burn your house down. And I think that idea of just understanding its power, it's been made by God, but it is one of those things that is all powerful. Why do you think it's on your mind so much?
Mm-hmm.
It has a power to your physicality, to your emotions, to all of it. And even on the note of, you know, talking to your kids about it, I think there is some of that realness that you have to teach your kids. And it's really uncomfortable. I just want to say this so we can get this right out of the way. It's really uncomfortable if you did not grow up with some of this and then you're trying to teach your kids this, men. And we're going to get to the point of sex. But
yeah.
Why I'm saying that, though, is because my kids will ask me questions that I'm not always prepared to answer, but I've committed to answer them. So let me give you another fun for instance. Probably a year ago, my daughter, who was 12 at the time, we had the sex talk because we wanted to talk to them a little bit early. And she's like, you guys have had like sex at least four times, right? I was like, I love that.
So you've done this four times?
Yeah. So it was a real question. And it came down to her. She kind of knew, but she was like, I could tell she was testing. Like, is my thought on this right?
So she wasn't trying to bait you.
No, she was, I think she was just trying to like is that right? Is that not right? And so I said, no, sweetie, that
happens. You're like, actually five.
Yeah, actually five. Like, no, this happens all the time. She's like, oh, no, are you serious? And I was like, yes, sweetheart, I've told you. She's like, when was the last time? And I said, sweetheart, I have told you that if you ask me these questions, I will tell you. But I promise you can't unhear what I tell you, right? Like, if you know, like, I don't want to make you uncomfortable, but I will tell you. Do you really want to know? And she's like, yes, I want to know. And I was like, well, what's today? And she goes, that's Wednesday. I was like, I think it was Sunday. She's like, oh, I knew it. I knew your door was locked for a reason. I knew you guys were doing something in there.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, yes, we were, sweetheart. Go talk to your mom about it if you want.
Time to ask your mother questions.
Yeah. You can ask me all you want, but
I don't know anything about talking to girls about this. So you're going to have to be the...
Well,
the wisdom on that. I've only talked to the four boys.
Honestly. Yeah, I think you lead. I think your wife needs to lead that conversation. I think it is the most naturally healthy. Now, obviously, if depending on circumstances, maybe it makes more sense for a father too. But I do think there's a gender appropriateness and just natural organicness to a mom sharing that with her daughter from that perspective, mm-hmm. just like I would share with my son. And so what we do is we kind of switch roles. She takes that initial spot, that initial conversation, rip the Band-Aid off. Like, this is what this actually is.
Right.
And then I'm available all the time to just talk, answer questions. Yeah. You know, I know that you know.
Right.
And then her with my son, especially when he was younger, was like, you know, I know, you know, and just let me know if you have, you know, I'm here to open. This is fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think why I'm saying that is because as a father, nothing will bring you to your own understanding of what your sexual understanding and belief system is quicker than your own kids as they get older. And so you might come to this topic and feel incredible shame, incredible discomfort, incredible pride. You mm-hmm. you might come from all these different spaces. And I just want to say our goal here isn't to elevate some who feel prideful or deflate anybody that's feeling shameful. Our hope is to say, sex is good. It's beautiful. It's super complex. It is not straightforward as much as it sounds like it might be just like an easy thing to talk about. It's very complex and it's different in each of our marriages. So we want to honor that and say that out of the gate, but we want to talk about this idea of intimacy. We want to talk about sex as sacrament. And then we want to talk about what it looks like practically.
Mm-hmm.
You down to go there?
You just said some words you can't say. Ask that question in a different way.
Are you ready to talk about this, Justin?
I'm ready to talk.
Okay, good.
Wow, you're so inappropriate.
This is going to be a fun episode. Any thoughts before we go into it?
Let's dive into the... I have thoughts, particularly on the sex as sacrament, all the way that the spiritual world and the physical world are inseparably intertwined in the world of sex. But maybe just intimacy generally first.
Yeah, so let me just highlight, you know, your marriage, you hear this word intimacy all the time, and it's an important word, but I think there's a little caveat that I have to say. It can become a catch-all word for being close without a lot of definition of what intimacy actually is in its fullness. And so we're just going to walk through really quick six different types of intimacy that you can and really need to experience in your marriage for closeness. And it's not just emotional intimacy, although you hear that. It's multi-layered, it's multifaceted, and I think that it's also important to, when you listen to this, men, or if you're a wife listening to this, either send this episode to your wife and or sit down and talk about this area. And what I want to encourage you to do, men, like, I don't know if we're going to make another chart for this one, but is to basically go
through... No diagrams on this episode. Sorry.
Justin, just shut that down. I guess we're not doing any diagrams on the sex.
I'm not drawing anything for this one.
That said, though, I think that it's important to just talk about this together and to do a curiosity thought experiment, a non-judgmental, and this is the important part. This is not to start an argument, a non-judgmental assessment of where your marriage is at. Your marriage is no doubt going to have areas of these pieces of intimacy that are either non-existent or just really weak. That's okay. But the point is to identify where you're at, where you're weak, and begin to work on where it is.
Yeah. And I want to interject there. It's probably impossible to have a non-judgmental conversation on this stuff, actually, because
I said
someone.
Assessment, not a conversation, assessment.
Well, I mean, all I'm saying is yes, this is the aspiration.
Yeah.
But I just want to mention, if you're going to talk about emotional intimacy with your spouse or physical intimacy with your spouse, someone is going to be upset about something.
Yes.
You know, so fighting about it and or feeling frustrated or left out or hurt about it, that is the norm, not the exception.
Yes.
Which is why it's so important to talk about it. So I'm just, and of course it's never a good time to talk about it, right? Like
never.
It's never a good time for a husband to talk about emotional intimacy. It's like, look, I've just had a long day at work. I don't want to think. It's probably never a good time for a wife to talk about physical intimacy. Like, look, it's been a hard day with the kids. I don't really, but like you both have to talk about it. You both have to talk about it. So I just want to give you permission to try to have a non-judgmental conversation, but to know that this is going to raise friction and that's part of the point. You got to figure this out.
Yeah. And this is going to poke the bear. So moving on, emotional intimacy. And I want to just describe these really in brief. So what is emotional intimacy? It's the ability to share feelings, thoughts, fears openly and safely. That's that idea where you have transparency in your relationship. There's like honesty that involves things like empathy for sure. Listening well, this might be an area that you are weak and your wife gives you feedback from others who are saying, hey, like, I don't feel like when I'm talking, you're like really listening. This is part of that emotional intimacy connection. So that's the first one. And we'll go back through these. And Justin, I'd love your thoughts. We have spiritual intimacy, especially in a Christian context. It's important that you have spiritual intimacy. This looks like praying together, going to church together, talking with God, having shared purpose in your relationship, realizing that your marriage exists for more than just your marriage. That's a really important part, but that's a part of spiritual intimacy.
Yeah.
So wholeness includes like having, hey, do we both serve God? Do we both love God? And I know that's not everyone's story. And so if you're here hearing this, and you're like, I have all the other ones, but I do not have spiritual intimacy. You know, I want to say first, that is so hard, and begin to pray into that as much as you can. And it is such a challenge, but that's obviously a goal. Intellectual intimacy.
Yes.
This is a good one. And this is
a big one for Lauren and I. We're like, marriage of the minds is a big part of our life.
Yeah. Sharing ideas,
dreams, visions, talking about books, talking about what we've read.
Interests.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. That's.
I mean, it's pretty hot. I love this. Is a good date night for us to talk about.
Well, I mean, that includes even like respecting each other's thoughts and perspective, especially when they're different.
Yeah.
Learning and having a curiosity about where they're coming from. Yeah. Like, so that's the intellectual intimacy. Then you have experiential intimacy, and that's like growing closer through shared experiences. This could be like date nights and getaways and vacations and memories as a couple, fun trips, like things that you're doing. So there's an intimacy that happens when you share experiences together, which is really fun. Then you have commitment-based intimacy. And that's simply, I mean, like it sounds, it's a strong sense of trust and safety. It's kind of what we talked about when you have made these marriage vows, right?
Yeah.
But this is a reminder and a reminding through your actions, through your words, through your body, through your life, that you are committed to this person. And intimacy actually flows from that place of deep commitment.
We talked about this in episode 4 of season 2 on that covenant of saying the covenant, remembering your vows, that intimacy that comes from knowing that you're committed.
Yes.
Huge.
It's a big part of it. And then lastly, the sixth one, and this is, there could be more than this, but this is where we'll stop, is physical intimacy, right? That is a part of it. And that includes, of course, sexual connection. It includes affection. But it's not just physical. Mm-hmm. It's not just sexual connection. This is also like physical touch and care and the idea of just connecting. And so the hope of this, again, is for you to just identify. We're naming stuff this season. And even in this bonus episode, we want to say, name where you're at. Like, where are you weak on this? A lot of us think of our relationship as emotional intimacy and physical intimacy.
Yes.
Those are the main two that I'd say we think of. And we kind of gauge where we're at with those two more than any, I would imagine, if you're anything like me or Justin. Those are the two main ones. But I think it's also really important that if you're weak in emotional intimacy and maybe even physical intimacy, I would wonder if you start with some of the others first.
Yes.
Start having some experiences. Yes. See how that leads and helps your emotional intimacy. What about intellectual intimacy? See how that leads to maybe even more physical intimacy. You just said something that was telling. It's hot when we're talking about this stuff. Like, there's a part of you that is activated in a non-sexual but could lead to that space.
Yeah.
Because you're connected, right? It's about overall connection.
Yeah.
I think so. Your thoughts on all this?
I think that's really helpful, actually. I've never heard types of intimacy broken down into all six of these. It rings very true though. And I think listening to an episode like this together with your spouse as a way of kicking off conversation on this, if you each even listed all six of these out and just rated on a scale of 1 to 10, like how's this going, I think, in our marriage. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you want to, it'll be great conversation and probably start some fights, but like share.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your ratings on each one. I think this is so helpful because it's often said, and I think very true, that for women, emotional intimacy helps lead to sexual intimacy.
Absolutely.
And for men, sexual intimacy helps lead to emotional intimacy.
Very true.
I think it's really true. But this is an even more robust picture of this, of all the ways that you can be working on intimacy together. And I really like it. It's challenging because it's pretty provocative to think it's going to be hard to work on your sex life if you're not working on your prayer life and spiritual intimacy.
Yes. Yes.
It's going to be pretty hard to have a great memory of experiences together if you're not also learning together and sharing your thoughts. And the idea of working on this in the context and the covenant of marriage is inspiring. And I also just think we're talking mainly to men here. Hopefully we have some women listening in, but we're talking to fathers, and most of us are going to be constantly wanting to improve sexual intimacy.
Mm.
And you're made for that. Like, it's great. No shame. Mm-hmm. Like, you're made for it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
You should be. But if you're not looking at all of these things, you're neither serving your wife nor yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're looking at intimacy and marriage only in the sexual dynamic to the exclusion of all others, you're probably not going to have a great sex life. Absolutely. So it's probably not going to be good for her. It might probably not going to be that good for you. But when you're doing the work to emotionally engage, when you're doing the work to be a spiritual leader in your family,
mm-hmm.
when you're saying things like, let's read a book together, let's go on a trip together. Great, great sex comes out of the fullness of that kind of life.
Yes.
And I will definitely say, like, I think Lauren and I's sex life is 100% the best when all these things are being worked on, not necessarily all going well, but when we know that we're working on them.
Yes.
There is so much intimacy that you, and this is the whole idea of sex, that really overflows into physicality. Mm-hmm. When you just C.S. Lewis puts it that we're not satisfied to just behold beauty. We want to consume it, to be united to it.
Oof.
And the idea of sex is pretty wild. It's that idea that we fall so in love with another person that we actually yearn to become one with them, to merge ourselves physically and spiritually. And that's not an isolated act. That's why we cannot talk about sex just physically.
Mm-hmm.
You have to talk about spiritually and emotionally and intellectually and theologically and all this stuff.
It's a part of the whole, it's the whole thing. And I think it's important to say, as we're, you know, talking about this, something that will conflict or tension or frustration in your marriage obviously will affect your intimacy. And it affects your physical intimacy, yes. But think about how hard it is, like, and men, I'm speaking to you, like, how hard is it to pray over or with your wife when you haven't dealt with conflict?
Right.
It's so hard. And until you end up, like, dealing with all of the, like, walking through and properly naming and dealing with the stuff that has come up for you guys, you have to be in a space of like naming this and working through it, because it all is intertwined. It all impacts the other in a deep way. So I think, again, this is a way for you and your spouse to talk about, have some conversation, go on a date, have the conversation, you know, wherever you can, and do your best to listen and be honest. And maybe there's room for you to grow. Maybe you're doing better in some places than you thought, but.
Fathers, we are so excited to let you know of two resources that myself and Justin have been working on. First, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is available exclusively right now at intentionalparents.org or intentionalfatherhood.org. It is a 31-day guide to help you pray and focus with consistency on your family, your children, helping shape their hearts while God shapes yours. And of course, you've heard about it. Justin's resource, his new book, The Body Teaches the Soul, is available everywhere books are sold. This book is about the 10 essential habits that build a healthy and holy life, habits that strengthen how you lead your home. So we want to just encourage you, if you have not grabbed those resources and those are helpful, please take a moment, get those now, and let's get back to today's episode.
So I think these six things help locate sex in sort of the geography of intimacy, if you will.
Yep.
Before we get to the practicals, I do think it's helpful to locate it theologically. And this can be brief because this could be a whole, and this is
a lot,
volumes on books, but I would just suggest sex is spiritual, sex is physical, and sex is powerful. And by what I mean by that is it is spiritual. I mean, God, sex in the Bible, and the Bible talks about it a lot, by the way. The Bible can be faulted maybe for talking too much about sex, definitely not too little.
Yeah. Like,
it's R-rated, it's X-rated at points. It's very intimate. Song of Solomon is right in the middle of it. Like, you open the Bible like around the middle and you get this very, like, very intimate book. Yeah. Like, well, what's going on here? Because God sees sexual union as perhaps the fullest metaphor of what spiritual union is, that longing to become one.
Yep.
To be consumed in joy and ecstasy is what Paul lays out in Ephesians as one of the mystery. Now, it's mysterious, right? So you don't want to get too didactic about this. You don't want to get too specific about this. Yeah. You compare one part of sex to your relationship with God and it starts to get weird and strange.
Yeah, yeah.
Do what the Bible does. Speak about it with metaphor, with respect, with mystery, and then you're onto something. So sex is spiritual. It's teaching you what relationship to God is ultimately like. Yeah. Apparently, we were meant for that kind of union, ecstasy with God. But it's also physical. I mean, he made our bodies to do this.
Yeah.
So I just think it's, can't say it enough, it's capital G good.
Yes.
It's good. That's why you want it. That's why marriage is built for it. That's why you should be having it, having a lot of it, having great sex over the whole span of your life, ideally. This is what sex is.
I want to talk about a lot and great in a second, but keep going.
We'll get to the practicals. And because of those things, because it's spiritual, because it's physical, it is so powerful.
Yes.
Which is where you can then start to talk about all the ways it goes wrong. Because when something is that powerful, it can do great good or great evil.
It destroys.
Which is why sexual abuse is so evil and destructive. Which is why pornography is so evil and destructive. Yeah. To take something so beautiful, so mysterious, so spiritual that God made, and then sell it as a commodity of women's and men's bodies on internet streaming videos is deeply evil.
Yes.
It is deeply destructive. It is deeply anti-creation, which, I think this stuff, again, clarity is kindness. It has explanatory power for the world. This is why sexual ethics are so important and Christians rightly hold to them.
Yeah.
Despite the controversy, despite how unpopular it is, despite, and the popularity changes from age to age.
Sure.
But to be consistent on saying, no, sex is sacred. You can't do that. You just can't do anything you want. You can't do it in that context, in this way. It sounds prudish at first. It is so wise to hold to the sexual ethic because it's powerful.
It's so powerful.
But so it's spiritual, it's physical, it's powerful. So we have to practice it. And I don't know if you want to dive right in. I'm ready. But
I
think talking about how to practice these things is helpful because it's not easy.
Absolutely. It's not easy. I want to highlight, let's move to practical. I'm just going to mention sex as sacrament. We talked about that really briefly, but obviously sex just isn't just pleasure and connection. It's a sacred sign of God's active grace in your life. Now, I know I don't want to over-spiritualize this, but there's, as you said, it's spiritual. So just to highlight that, there are five specific things that happen every time a married couple enters making love. It's a beautiful thing that happens. And I just want to highlight these really briefly because I think it's important to know that this physical act that might seem benign has a spiritual reality and power that is happening maybe even behind the scenes that you don't notice or always see that is actually doing a lot of this beauty that you're speaking of. First is reassurance. When a married couple comes together, you're saying again, hey, I choose you. I chose you. My whole being. Second, identity. It reminds you who you are. For a man, it affirms your strength. It affirms that you are to be desired and wanted. for a woman, it affirms her beauty, her power, her grace. Together, it reflects like God's design, man and woman.
Love it.
Reconciliation. When you come together in a world of conflict, I mean, when you come together in this way, it transcends wounds. It can. It restores closeness. Mm-hmm. It offers a glimpse of heaven. It's beautiful. A fourth commitment. Sex says, I'm still in it. Mm-hmm. I'm still in this mm-hmm. with you. Now, obviously, that's not always the case. I want to be really clear. Like, there are the outlying, you know, people and conversations and situations. But in general,
I mean, probably any advice, this would read this through the whole episode.
Yeah.
We're talking about sex practice healthily in the covenant of marriage. All the, you know, these things can happen. You know, it's not, it's not like, it can go as wrong as it goes right. So importantly, caveat, keep going though. Keep going.
And thank you for that. It's a physical restating of your vows.
Yes.
You're physically restating, I'm committed to you. And then fifth, sex is sacrament. Fifth one is gratitude. At best, sex is Thanksgiving. It is a celebration and a gift to who you are to one another. Tim Keller said this, love it. Sex is God's way for two people to say, I belong completely, permanently, and exclusively to you.
That's so good. This reminds me of what we were talking about in our episodes on giving your life away, and how we can get stuck in the frustration and the bitterness and lack the gratitude and joy. And sex is a defiant practice against that, because sex is, even in the difficult times of marriage and in years that are frustrating and tiring, you are fighting for joy together. I mean, you can't not. I mean, sex is sex is always that. And so it's really radical. It's a radical way to be fighting for gratitude and joy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some.
So how do you fight for it? How do you practice it?
Consistently. Let me highlight, you said two things, that sex is so good. You should be having a lot of it and good sex. I want to just highlight those two things. And when you say a lot, I know what you mean, but I want to define that. A lot for your marriage, because it's very easy to, there's people now that have podcasts similar to this one, right? And they might say things that you hear as well. Like, hey, we have sex every day. Like my spouse and we have sex every day.
Wait, how old are these people?
They're our age.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, good for them. Well, and that is my heart.
I'm not sure I have the time, capacity, or even desire. There's so many other things in life.
I would like to try, right? But I think I could really quickly see, like, this breaks down. There's no
shame. That seems like an odd and unhelpful thing to hold up as a norm
for people. Yeah, yeah. So I want to highlight that to say, the internet and folks that are Christians as well, you might hear things that make you think that is the standard and or the goal. And I just want to highlight that is a big lie that can create a ton of tension in your relationship. So you have to look at your spouse, your situation, and what is consistent for each of you, your needs together is to serve one another. If you hear that a couple has sex every day, and again, you said this great, yay for them. That's exciting. That's their dynamic and that's their thing and that works for them and they both love it and that's great. And if that's not your dynamic, you're not failing in your marriage. And that doesn't mean that you're not having a lot of sex. It just means that you are having what amount of sex is healthy for your relationship and your needs and dynamics. So that's a lot. And then good sex. I mean, this is a tricky one. What defines good sex? Mm-hmm. And I would say, and I would actually, before I say anything about this, what defines good sex as far as, you know, you're saying good sex? What do you mean by that? And I'm just curious.
I'm not sure.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, right now. Okay. I'll go out on a limb.
I know I'm putting you on the spot.
I think what I'm saying is sex that both husband and wife are enjoying, ideally both orgasming.
Yeah.
I think where both feel served.
Yes.
And whenever I talk about any of this, I'm talking about sex in the long run in the covenant of marriage. So every sexual encounter is not going to be like that. Yes. And I think it's very, very okay to know that. In fact, I think it's so empowering to know that for both husband and wife, as in, it is okay just to serve the other. It's a wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
It's okay for sex to be just about reconciliation tonight. Like, we need to have makeup sex. And maybe that is exuberant and exciting and fun and loving. Or maybe it is entering in to the practice of sex because you know you need to get past the emotional frustrations you're having. So there's, I think there can be lots of different modes of, okay, tonight only this person is orgasming, or tonight it's boring, or tonight it's just, we're just practicing. But in the long run, I think what I mean when I say good sex is always working towards a norm of both people enjoying it, both yes. serving, both feeling grateful, both orgasming.
I see. I love that definition. So I agree with that definition okay. fully. So thank you for fleshing that out.
That passed?
No, you didn't pass. This was
surely people in the comments will tell me all the things I said wrong.
For this conversation, I wanted to define that simply to take out the guesswork for the men listening. Mm. Justin said good sex. Well, one guy's version might be very different from another.
Yeah, you
might have an addicted background to porn and you think good sex is violent sex or a version of sex that is not realistic. So I'm highlighting all
okay,
this.
Okay, that's probably super important to mention. And I don't talk about this stuff enough, so I don't think about that. But I'm
highlighting that to say the definition is helpful for that's what you mean. That's what I mean. And I think we're naming what we mean. That's what we mean when we say good sex.
But that makes me want to add that both people are honored by sex.
Yes, thank you.
Because we live in we always live in evil times and cultures. But our culture of pornography is particularly evil in the way that people actually try to say, even from the female or maybe male being abused in these videos, to try to argue that there's some sort of, I like that, or, well, this is empowering to me to go to this place, which is just such a dark and evil lie to take abuse, violence, or degradation mm-hmm. and celebrate it.
Yes.
And even say that, oh, no, actually, people, if you're really in touch with your desire, you want this. Such a dark way that I see, like, men in a male-dominated industry making money mm-hmm. off other people's desires and then calling it good.
Yes.
So there's so much of that. I don't think we need to maybe dwell on that. No. But I just do mean most males listening will have been formed in some way by pornography.
Yes.
And
both of us included, it's not, right? Like in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately,
you've seen it and experienced
like
it.
We're probably normal. Most of us, including us, have been... You know, had seasons in life where pornography yes. was normal.
Yeah.
And fortunately, it's been a long time now, and there's been a lot mm-hmm. of healing. You know, this was really only a norm in my life in my college, early 20s years. And really, most of my marriage has been free of that, which has been so healing. But I think of it as that. I think of marriage, you need sex in marriage to heal.
Yeah, absolutely.
The pornography wounds. The opposite of that would be using your marriage as a place to try to reenact those pornography wounds.
Ooh, good word. That is
and so
such a good word.
You've got to, men who are listening, that is your responsibility, and we're not going to be able to tell you how.
Yeah.
But you know when you are trying to get something because you saw it somewhere, and somewhere in your head you're trying to check a dark, evil box of like, can I do this?
Wow.
That's good. Is far off in your dark corner of desire. That's not in I'm trying to become united, honor, serve a woman I love.
Yep.
And let me tell you, that is better, by the way. Like that honor, service, grateful, life-giving sex is going to be better, more sexy, more fulfilling. And include a lot of things and a lot of fun things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, man, you know what I'm talking about. You know the difference.
Yes. And I think it's a great way to say it. So I wanted to just kind of debunk those two things for anyone curious. A lot means whatever is a lot for your relationship based upon what you and your wife decide, not on someone else's relationship. Do not compare and do not despair. And then the definition of good sex is so beautiful. That I could not agree more. That's exactly what I would have said as well. And I think that's helpful as we move to the practical part. So I think the practical thing is like, well, what is normal and what is expected? And I think that it's really, again, hard to answer this for everybody specifically. So we're going to be general with some things, we'll be specific with others. Your sexual background absolutely affects your marriage. Mm-hmm. So if you slept with a bunch of people before marriage, That's going to impact your marriage. If you slept with each other only before marriage and then got married, that's going to affect your marriage. That's mm-hmm. that still affects your marriage. Now, it doesn't mean any of these are things you can't solve, work through, begin the process of healing, but just know, like, what is your story and your spouse's story going into marriage? Because that is going to highly educate you and highlight what the dynamics are in your relationship. So I'm speaking from a place, I'll just be vulnerable with myself. I came from a place, I was a virgin when I got married, and so was my wife. And I was her first everything, which is great. And we were both, I made out with a couple girls before. My kids would say, or my wife would say, a lot of girls, but you know, it stayed there. It stayed with the making out. That said though, I think it's really important to kind of know, like, that's where I'm coming from. And so when we talk about, like, what's normal, our normal might be different from yours. So I want to say that. And then I also want to just say practically that when we get into marriage, sex changes over time. And I think that's actually a really beautiful thing.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Yes. But I've been married almost 19 years. You're almost the same.
Yeah, we're almost 19 years this fall.
That's right. Wait, so what is your anniversary?
In a month, September 8th. Oh, yes.
Yeah, sweet. We're on like the same track. So. Yeah. So getting married young, like what sex like looked like when we got married and what sex looks like now, in some ways similar, but then in other ways very different, right? And I think there's parts of that
we're a lot better at it now than we used to be. And again, which I think is one of the joys of marriage. I think and most people do, you know, they think sex is for the young, not for the human.
Yeah,
true. But sex is for the human. And actually, yeah. You're not very good at it early in marriage.
Yeah.
Despite thinking how beautiful you are.
I'm almost tempted to ask, what do you mean by good at it? But what does that mean?
We didn't know how to serve each other. We didn't know what actually felt good for the other person.
Yeah.
And even if we thought we did, we weren't very good at accomplishing that purpose. There was a lot of awkwardness, and that for some people that can mean embarrassment and getting used to it. And that's for sure. But that can.
Yeah,
logistically, like how are we doing this or that, this position or that position? Is this working?
Yeah,
your
face is telling me something different.
We didn't know. Let me put it this way: after almost 19 years of marriage, we know each other so well.
Yes,
and we know each other's bodies so well.
Yes.
And I've.
That's great.
In the idea of like being more one, like I feel like I know her body, like the back of my hand now. And I think her, me.
Yeah.
And shoot, we've only been married for 19 years. Hopefully we're going to be married for 40, 50, 60 years before we depart
point.
This earth.
That's a great point.
But so there's.
That's what you mean by getting better. That's
helpful. What I mean. I think this is a helpful category prescriptively. So for fathers who are listening, and hopefully you've now gotten your wife to listen along with you so you can have a conversation about it, to be a student of the other over your life, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually, but also sexually, to say we have a lifetime to practice figuring out what lights you up, what makes you feel loved, what makes you feel desired, what kind of encounter you enjoy, and what kind of encounter I enjoy. And sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different, and practicing both. I love thinking about sex as practice.
Yes.
Because I think it frees you from the pressures of performance and getting it right every time.
That's good.
And lets you say, it can just be a date night where we're practicing again.
Yes.
It can just be Saturday where we're practicing again. And, you know, I think if you're going to practice anything, you probably need to be practicing every week.
Yeah.
If you can, multiple times a week.
Yeah.
It's hard to get good at anything if you're doing it once a month.
Yeah.
I mean, well, and that could be different for everybody,
mm-hmm.
but I think probably most people range of normal is going to be, you're going to be trying to practice at least weekly.
I was just going to say, there's a couple things that I know we do practically that are very helpful, and it's not about intensity. It's about consistency, right? I think that's the idea with
the intensity is good.
Yeah. Intensity in certain seasons. Yeah, absolutely. And what I mean by simply that is like the consistency is the win there. The things that I'll just highlight that it can be practical, just hopefully to encourage those listening, is I think to have an agreed upon time, at least like we've talked about weekly.
Like a lot of my friends say this, like that scheduling sex in this season of life, and as in agreed upon time, or at least some, weekly,
yes,
it becomes a good anchor.
So for some, that feels like the romance is gone.
Right.
We can't do it. Right. Now, I would just highlight, your romance is not gone. If you are barely having sex because you're waiting to feel like it, you might, there's
then
something
the romance
there.
Is gone.
Then there's something you need to do to consistently, like there is a whole reality of once you start practicing, your heart warms to this more and more. So I would just highlight to you, for some, it might feel rigid, but the point really is find a time that you can agree upon. I know for Elizabeth and I, and this isn't TMI, but like Sabbath, maybe
I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah. And my wife will too, is, Sabbath is a great time for us to connect. Mm-hmm. I know that if it's Saturday, your boy's doing stuff, like things are happening. And basically we don't really even have to talk about it anymore. Like I don't mention like, hey, Saturday afternoon is coming. We know like this is like built into our rhythm of life.
And that's where, what started as a schedule is now a rhythm.
Yes.
And I think that is super, if that helps you, then do it.
Yes.
Like, listener, I would say Lauren and I are a mix of both. Like we pretty religiously practice a weekly date night.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's almost always going to include sex.
Sure.
So there is a rhythm of, at least on date night, we're going to have sex. But then there's spontaneity on like, what other night? You know,
absolutely.
And it's definitely, it would be unusual for date night to be our only night.
Yeah.
Now, what's helpful and unhelpful about that? Maybe you take something helpful about that, that there's both rhythm and spontaneity.
Yeah.
I also know some people who are like, it's helpful to not expect sex on a date night so that they can be focused on conversational and emotional intimacy and intellectual intimacy. And that is a bit strange to me, but I know it's very not strange to other people.
Yeah.
So I think that's fine too.
Sometimes though, also the power, if it works for your dynamic, like I know for me sometimes I'm like, hey, can we have sex before we go to talk? Cause I will be so much more present.
Yeah.
If this happens first. And sometimes she's like, we have not connected emotionally for me to connect physically. Well, like I haven't connected physically. So who wins,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Who lays down their life? Well, obviously me, because there's no way. There's no way she's ever.
Yeah, you're going to lose that.
I'm out on that one.
It'll be.
So I think the point really is, and I'll say this, we have an anchor, but then also they're similar thing. It's not only that time. I think there's always that I know me mentally as a man, I know that there's this moment coming in the future. Soon, Saturday is always, 7 days away. So I can know that. And then also to say if I'm gone or we have a schedule conflict, I'm usually the one that brings it up. Surprise, surprise. When are we going to move? Like, when would be a good time if this isn't happening? Yeah. And then we change it in that space. So I think it's just a highlight. Yeah.
You said something that is probably more important. You are the one to bring it up. I think some guys are good at this. Some guys can't stop talking about it. I raise my hand in that category. If you ask Lauren, she's like, yeah, he's always talking about sex. But
even with me, he does.
Some people, I brought it up a lot with you. I think some people in difficult seasons of marriage, for sure.
Yeah.
And those seasons can lead to times where I think as men, we check out and surrender. And maybe out of bitterness, maybe out of fear, maybe I don't even know what it is, but you lose the capacity or the willingness to bring it up and talk about it. I think some people are in that space. And I just want to encourage you, if that's the space you're in, you got to fight for the joy. You have to fight for the practice. And you can't be sitting around waiting for this to happen. You can't be sitting around waiting for the other person to bring it up.
Yep.
This probably goes for husbands and wives, but we're talking to the husbands here. So part of initiating is initiating conversation about it.
Yes.
So that you can work through the emotional intimacy to get to the physical intimacy. So I just want to encourage anybody out there who's, hasn't talked about it or struggling with dissatisfaction and hasn't brought it up, bring it up. If you can, this has been a theme all season. If you can name something, you're fast on your way to working on healing it.
Yeah.
You know, you can't fix everything, but you can name it. But you're going to be a lot closer to healing if you're naming, hey, our sex life has disappeared this year.
Mm-hmm. I think you use your sex life as a barometer. I'm sorry to cut you off. I just realized as a barometer of health in your marriage.
I think, talk about it. I think that's so true.
There's this terrible phrase. Terrible is the wrong word. It's just really cheesy. And it was from a pastor I'd heard of ages ago. A couple that lays together, stays together. Remember that. That's free. That will be in your head forever.
Yeah, okay.
You're welcome, men who hear that. Please say that to your wife and see how she feels about that. But it was a joke / sincere that anytime you look at a real breakdown in a marriage, really, the sex life is either non-existent, and especially as I was a pastor for 18 years in the local church, the amount of couples that I would meet with, the amount of premarital that I would do, whenever you would meet with a couple and sex was not one of the anchors of their relationship, it was every single time you could see when that was the main through point. And so I think it is a barometer of health in your relationship. If you're not working through things to a level where you can be intimate and close and connected with each other on a physical level in that way, it's a deeper thing. So if you're listening to this and you're like, yeah, we haven't had sex for a month, I would say that's a good moment for you to go, hey, she had a baby, or maybe, guess, you know, there's circumstances when it will change.
Yes.
But in general, if everything's, you know, considered normal and you guys are just not connecting out of just busyness or distraction or not dealing with the deeper thing, that should raise a little bit of a flag for you to say, we got some stuff to deal with.
Yes. I 110% agree. And also want to add, things like sex that are so central to how God made us and so powerful, two things can be true at once. And the other side of that truth, which is just equally as true, is that sex is not just the barometer of how it's going. Mm-hmm. It's also often the thermostat, if you will, working on it changes everything else, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe the thermometer and thermostat is the right metaphor there. But I think of it as root and cause.
Yeah.
As in a result and cause. You know, if a healthy sex life is often the result of so much other work. And so when you see it disappear, you're like, oh, something way upstream has gone wrong.
Yeah.
But it's also true that to work back, you need to start working on sex. So you can't just work on the emotional stuff, or you can't just work on the experiential stuff. It's a both and. It's both the
whole
cause
list
and the result of a healthy marriage. So, and I think not always, but more typically, I think wives need to hear this. And again, we're talking to husbands, so it's not like I'm trying to talk over somebody's shoulders here. I'll just say what Lauren says. Lauren would tell you that before we got married, one of her female mentors in her life, a woman told her, when you get married, you need to think of sex as spiritual power. As in, when you are practicing it with your husband, you are giving your marriage an incredible power that you will not be able to fully understand or describe, but he will know. And when you are causing something to happen when you engage in sex in a healthy way, in an intimate way, desirous way. And man, I'm so thankful. Lauren, I think, has always thought like that. And I could not articulate all the ways that I feel protected and kept, protected and kept safe because of the way that she believes that when we're working on sex, we're working on marriage.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful service to our marriage. I think the same, you know. But it's easier for me to think the same. Of course I'm going to think it. And I really appreciate that she does too. And she thinks this. We must be working on this.
Well, very helpful. It brings up the reality, a common thing I'll hear. I think this is even very cultural for sure. But is a lot of men being disappointed or wishing their wife would initiate sex more?
Of course we do.
But I want to highlight this because I think there's maybe a lot of men listening that are kind of bitter about that. How come she doesn't initiate? And I wish she would just talk to me about it. And I discovered a long time ago, I'm not comparing to the outside world, but I'm looking at my marriage. Am I looking at my personality? I'm looking at my wife's personality. The truth is, by nature, I'm an initiator. Now, that is not just in sex. That's actually in a lot of things. Conversation, conflict, you name it, I initiate. Like, I have no problem starting the combo, getting into it. Initiation isn't a stretch for me. Not very hard. Initiation is really hard for her just on lots of levels. Not even sexual, but on other levels. She's not necessarily initiated. Yeah. But you know what she's amazing at? She's the most amazing responder. If I initiate anything, she's the first one on the line to help with it, to be there present, to do it. And so I had to, for a long time, realize like, this is not going to, her felt need for sex is not as strong as mine by a long shot. No. She doesn't have the felt need, like, sweetheart, at the end of the day, you know what I'm needing.
I'm laughing because Lauren will often say, you don't wait long enough for me to be ready to initiate. She's like, I
need
a
month.
She's like, my sex drive hasn't gone unsatisfied since we got married because like, I'm just on a different cycle than you.
You should tell her that it must be nice.
Yeah, I always like, look, it must be great.
I'm
on a daily cycle here. Like, I think there are actually helpful stats here and you can go look them up. Yes. I think if I'm getting it right, it's like some 70% of females are typically responsive.
Yes.
Desire is what they experience. So they're actually really into it. But if someone else initiates properly. And most males are like on the bell curves, like we're initiative desire. But of course, the stereotypes don't always overlap. It can be vice versa.
Absolutely.
And you can both be on one side or the other. But I just agree with you. It's helpful to know that there is a category of responsive desire.
Yeah.
And you don't need to feel bad if your wife's not initiating. In fact, that's part of your role to you know, woo her, romance her, initiate her.
And if your wife shares that initiation role, or let me just say this, there's different seasons, right? There's certain seasons where maybe she is initiating and then the kids stage. I mean, I'll never forget when my wife told me, she's like, listen, I've been touched and I mean, she's breastfeeding at the time. I've been touched and sucked on all day. My body has been feeding humans and everyone has touched me everywhere. I'm really not in the space to be touched by you too. And I'm like, okay, you know, just try not to die.
Why everybody else? Yeah, not me?
I made these friggin' babies. So I would just say like, that's another evolving thing. Like there's seasons where it's like her felt need is different. But again, I think my wife is similar to Lauren. Elizabeth thinks the same, where she understands the importance, the dynamic. And I also think that sometimes you're not in the mood for something until somebody gives you a reason to. So let me just say like, sometimes it's like, hey, I know you're not in the mood yet, but like, can you just give me an opportunity to try?
I think that's a great way like, to...
If you stay out of the mood, maybe this is just a one-sided event. Yeah. But if it's not, like, you know,
I think in a healthy marriage that is possible, and I think that is the sign of health, where you can ask without anger, "Can I try to get you in the mood?" Yeah. And she can respond without bitterness. You can try.
You can try. I'm like, girl, don't understand. You give me a challenge, I'm going for it.
That means you're comfortable with failure. You're comfortable with temporary rejection. You're comfortable with a range of outcomes. I think that's a sign of health.
I'm just laughing because I think about the times of like, anytime she says, like, she's like, you can try. I'm like, are you kidding? Like, now you've just given me
you start cracking your knuckles.
Like, now you just gave me a task of my favorite kind. All right, no problem. So I think it's so funny because, you know, and we're talking real and we're trying to be practical here because this is like the realness, the rawness of like what we experience on a weekly, daily basis. And I think also maybe to highlight disappointment's a part of that. There's times when your sex drives don't line up. A lot of the times it might. There's could be just long stretches of your marriage that they just never line up. I had some friends in a different stage of life, an older stage of life. And he was an older guy. And this was actually probably almost 8 years ago now. We were in a group, like a men's group together. And we were just kind of sharing some of the burdens of the moment of our life that we had been in. And he was in his mid-50s at the time, I think. And I actually didn't know him very well, but he like for the first time was like really open and honest with all the guys with what he'd been struggling with. And I was like, oh man, he's going to admit to porn use or something. I'm sure he just, the way he was teeing it up was like, he's going to confess something big. So I was listening, I was leaning in and he said, I'm just really feeling sad. I've been married for over 35 years and my wife has never experienced an orgasm ever, like in her whole life. She's just, her body has never been able to experience orgasm. Mm. And we've been able to have kids and we've, you know, we've had a couple of kids, all this different stuff, but she's never been able to experience that. And I just remember thinking like, whoa, I've never thought about that as a dynamic. I didn't know, you know, obviously everyone has different situations. And it was so interesting to me to think about, wow, the act of like serving her husband for her is like probably a lot different. Like sex for men is easy. In general, it's not a challenging thing.
Yeah.
But I think even that wife, and they were still intimate actively, you know, realizing just like how one-sided and service oriented that act was for her. And also made me feel like so bad for her. And then at the same time realizing like what a beautiful example this is of like marriage. He's being honest about mourning the fact that like she doesn't ever seem into this ever, because she doesn't honestly in a physical way get anything out of it that she would even know, you know? It's all to just highlight that's just one dynamic of many that you just have to hold in your marriages. And I think just like there's beauty and there's joy in marriage, there's a lot of pain in sex. There's a lot of pain in sex as well. And there's disappointment and there's times when you think you should be able to get more and do more and want more. And again, I think that's the lie of the culture that we've been in. Your life, it does not exist to just gather and to take. It's actually to give away. And so if we use the framework of season two that we've been talking about, how do you give your life away? How do you give your sex life away to your spouse?
Yeah, right. That's a great posture to land.
You know, like how do we do that? And again, I don't think this is easy. And you know, there's 1,000 things we didn't even have time to talk about in this episode, and we know that. But we wanted to at least start with some framework of understanding intimacy, understanding, you know, sex as sacrament. There's beauty that happens in the heavenlies when you make love that you don't even see. And I think the main thing that we can say as men, initiate the conversation. If your wife hasn't talked to you about it and you're feeling uncomfortable, or you know you just need to talk about it, just initiate. Say, hey, I'd love to have a conversation about our sex life. And it's hard sometimes because there's pain there and there's disappointments and sometimes you don't say it right.
But a bad, hard conversation would be a great way to start, because it's not going to start another way.
Yeah, that's true.
You need to talk about it. And I think my theme of this is practice. I mean, sex within marriage is something you practice, so you can be practicing the covenant, practicing the self-sacrifice, practicing the love. This is a great one for people to send questions on, though, because there's a lot of things we didn't talk about. A lot of things we might have said that's highly specific to our marriage, or a lot of things that you might have questions on that's highly specific to your marriage. So
Hello.
Send us that voice memo.
hello@intentionalfatherhood.org. And maybe lastly, just to close it, is there's so many nuances to this. There's no way that we would, you know, we are two heterosexual males in a very particular dynamic. I know that there's, you know, 50 other dynamics and potential things that we can't speak to or talk to, but your fatherhood needs you to have a healthy sex life.
Yes.
With your spouse. That's a very important clarifier.
To be clear.
Our
working definition.
It needs you to have a healthy sex life. And it doesn't, and again, healthy defined by your spouse and you and your limitations and your health. And as you guys step into that, like, can I just encourage, can I give permission to all the couples listening after listening to this? If it functionally makes sense, go make love. Like, please, this is permission for the next 24 to 48 hours.
Go practice.
Like, this is a good gift. And sometimes we overthink it. And sometimes it is really complex, but sometimes it's just like, oh man, we just need to step into this. So men, I don't think you need the permission to want, but I think in general, if you're listening to this as a couple, like, step into this. The bonus episode to you is permission. Go make love. Go have a connection time with your spouse and enjoy it.
Can't wait for all the questions on this one.
Me too. Send them in. Hello at intentionalfatherhood.org. Can't wait to hear all of them. And just remember, if you're sending a voice memo, we'll hear your voice and so will other people.
And it might get played on the podcast as we answer it. So,
and if you don't want your friends to know your question, maybe use a voice disguiser. I'm not just going to say. All right. That's it. Bonus episode on sex.